Right, hello everybody, me Bonnie Burns, and welcome to the Pet Business Inner Circle January audio training. And we've got a lot to get through in this month's training, so I need you to pay special attention. And this will be a one that you should listen to probably a few times. 10 times might be pushing it, but then again it might not. I know a lot of you are getting off listening to me as you're driving around in between your one-to-ones and your dog walks. Well, there's a lot I'm going to be covering this training, and a lot of it is bigger picture stuff. Some of you won't even have thought about starting doing any of this yet. Some of you will have started, but you need to be doing more. But I want everybody to get on board with the content creation and getting your story out there. Couple of things before we start. I can hear Derek barking downstairs already, which is great. Well done to Carol, who won last month's book. In the question was, what was Ryan Halliday's job before his first job? And Carol got that right, and so she wins a copy of Perennial Seller. So once you've read that, Carol, please let us know what you think. Welcome to any new members who've jumped on board lately. Great to have you here. Make sure that you listen to this CD. Obviously, you listen to it now, aren't you? Make sure you're listening to stuff. Make sure you're reading the Chronicles and you are taking part in the discussion group, asking questions and checking in regularly. I don't mind answering any questions in there. I'll do a video for you, or I'll explain it in a post. But I can't help you if you don't tell me what you're struggling with. There are people who I know, because they've told me, on their coaching calls, who have copies of the ledger for the last couple of months piling up in the corner of their desk in their house. Now, part of the challenge for me is getting you guys moving, getting you taking action on this stuff. But, you know, you really do need to be making time to get your finger out your arse and actually read the bloody stuff as well, yeah? Reading this stuff, you know, this is going to start to change your behavior once you start listening to these type of things. And thinking of things in a different point of view, you know. I'll reiterate the point that I've told a few times, which is when I'm in John McCulloch's Inner Circle, well, Elite Group as well, but when I was just in John's Inner Circle, he sent out a CD that was entitled The Ultimate Selling Tool, which was all about how to write a book. And at the time I was thinking about writing a book. In fact, I probably wasn't even thinking about writing a book. It was just kind of the germ of an idea in the back of my mind. And I listened to that CD over and over again. And you pick up so much from doing something like that. Yeah, it's probably a little bit sad, if I'm honest. But you know, why wouldn't I listen to someone like John? And, you know, why wouldn't you listen to someone like me? You know, I'm spending a lot of my marketing education all the time, constantly investing, learning, reading, implementing, and I'm distilling the best of everything that I do, and, you know, pinching other people's ideas as well. And I'm putting it into these ledgers and the chronicles and the audio training and stuff that I'm doing and the webinars and things like that. So it's all here for you, yeah? It's all here for you to do. I mean, this is on the subject of content. You know, this is content that I will use and reuse over and over again in the future. And this content may become a copy of the ledger, or part of a copy of the ledger, or it may become an ebook, or a course, or a video training, or an actual book. You know, this is. But I'm on the content train. I'm creating content all the time. I'm not going to stop, you know. So, and I need you guys to get starting with it. But I first of all need you to read my content and start taking action on that. So, why create content? Yeah, why do we need to have a killer content creation plan? Why do we need to know about storytelling? Why do we need to be thinking about these things to help us to grow our business? Well, experts create content. Yeah. If you aren't demonstrating your expert status, then it's going to be more difficult for you to charge premium prices. Yeah, and it's going to be more difficult for you to assume a position of, assume the premier position as the leading dog pet professional in your town. Yeah, it's going to be more difficult for you to do that if nobody knows anything about you. Okay, so we need to be creating content, whether it's emails, blogs, books, videos, newsletters, whatever the hell it is that we're creating. We have to be creating content, right? Now this is especially true of for the dog trainers in the group, because essentially dog training, like any kind of coaching, is like transferring knowledge, isn't it, from one person to another, you know, teaching someone something, a new way of doing things. Well, there are lots of ways that you can teach someone how to do something with their dog, how to get him to walk to heel, how to get him to fetch a ball, how to get him to do a trick, how to get him to stop jumping up at the kitchen counter and pinching chicken. All these kind of things, you can teach them, you can break these down into steps, and you can give that information to people in many different ways. And you should be giving that information to people in many different ways too. Otherwise, as I've touched upon in the ledger this month, if you're constantly just relying on, you know, your one-to-ones and your group classes, then you're forever going to be in a cycle of swapping time for money. And this makes it very difficult for you to achieve the freedom that you want from your business, you know, unless you're happy working all the days that God sends. So you it will behoove you to it will help you to get more freedom if you have lots of different ways that people can get the knowledge that you have in your head. Yeah, whether it's through an email course, whether it's through a correspondence course, whether it's through a video course. But you should have, you sh or even if you haven't yet, I know a lot of you haven't, but you're starting to think about it. You know, you should have a way for you to give people information that doesn't involve you actually doing it yourself. Yes, it takes time to do these things. It takes time. It takes a bit of effort. It takes a bit of planning, and it takes a bit of testing too. But it's something that you have to do. I think you have to do anyway. The sensible people who, you know, have a little vision of, or a big vision even, of where they want their business to be in 3, 4, 5, 10 years' time, you'll see that unless you want to be constantly being the one who's doing the teaching in person, then you're gonna struggle, you know. You're gonna and creating content is the start of you creating the vehicle for you to pass this knowledge on to other people. Yeah, so dog trainers especially, but not just dog trainers, you know, dog groomers in the group and dog trainers too. I know most of the dog trainers in the group have at least a passing interest in dog, sorry, the dog walkers in the group have at least a passing interest in dog training. So there are some basic, probably dog training skills that you can pass on in, to your dog owners in your town. Dog groomers, you will have clients who want not don't necessarily want to become groomers, but they want to learn how to keep the dog in good condition in between the groom. You know, the groom's an important part of the it's an important part of the dog's life, isn't it, really? You know, the relationship you have with the dog, you know, the groom's the daily health check. Well, it would be really easy for any and all of the groomers in the group to produce some kind of short course or tip sheet or, you know, some kind of information ebook that helps the dog owners to, you know, keep more on top of the dog's grooming in between the actual visits to the groomers. Yeah, and people who are interested in those things will pay money for that as well. Yeah, and they will prefer to get the information from you than just, you know, downloading it from some crappy little ebook that's on Amazon, written by somebody who don't need to know nothing about dog grooming at all, or dog training, which is often the case. Slurp of water. Yeah. So, but anyway, just regardless of how you're going to use it, you know, creating content is It really helps you to kind of solidify your ideas. Yeah, writing things down and planning them out, and then putting them into all these different forms that I talk about. It really solidifies your own ideas about what you think about dog training, and it helps to give your dog training technique some kind of identity, which is ultimately what you need as well. You know, this is about you creating a brand identity for yourself and creating your own myth and your own legend, and your own celebrity status in your area, so that you are the one who people want to come and see. You are the one who they want to climb over broken glass to use your services. Yeah, to paraphrase Dan Kennedy. So we can do this in many different ways, which I'm going to be talking about in the class now. So the content essentially it tells your story. Yeah, it tells people more about you. It positions you as an expert, and it helps to make the buying decision easier for the client. Yeah, that's what this content's doing. This content is not just teaching the client how to tell the dog to do a sit or how to get the dog to come back in the park. All right, it's a story or a series of stories about you and what you do and why you do it and why it's important to people, why they need to listen to you. All right. And you do kind of create your own sort of legend, you know, and when you start to put this content out there, this helps to form your reputation. All right. I've heard Dan Kennedy say that, you know, what they read and hear about you, that's what forms your reputation. Okay, and what they read and hear about you that's produced by you and put into a newsletter format or something like that, they will believe almost as much as they will like a review from somebody else about you, you know. So this is why we need to start doing this. This is why we need to, even if you're only going to produce some content on a very small scale, maybe it's writing an email series or a series of blogs, or you're going to do a series of videos or something like that. Doesn't matter what it is. That this is the point of what it does, yeah? We can get our point across because we want people to know about us. We want people to want to learn more about us. And the more they know about us, the more that they believe that we're an expert, that, you know, the more valuable our service is going to be, the higher price they're going to pay, and the more demand there's going to be for your services. All right. So what kind of content should you be producing? Well, there are various kinds, obviously. There's kind of, I've put them into two sort of categories here, really. There's like permanent content, which is quite valuable, I think. And then there's sort of throwaway cheap content. Okay, so throwaway content would be stuff like Instagram stories, tweets, and Facebook statuses, live or otherwise. You know, they can be good. Do those things to help you to build awareness about your service, but the sort of throwaway nature means that they aren't going to be valued as highly. You know, they're not going to have as much sticking power, are they? Yeah, it doesn't matter how good your Instagram picture is, it ain't going to be as valuable as a book that you write. You know, or how funny or how clever your tweet is, it's not going to be as powerful as a book or a blog that you write. So a good example of this, because I've mentioned Facebook there as well, a good example of this is my new group, you know, the Grow Your Pet Business Fast group that I've set up on Facebook. You know, I'm not kidding myself that this group's going to be the thing that explodes my pet business coaching side of the business, but it's purely there, as I've said before, to help me to build my audience. Right, I'm on Facebook a lot of the time anyway, probably more than I should be. When I'm on there, I'm posting things in different groups, dog sense, pet sitting groups, that kind of thing. Some of the posts get likes, some of them don't, but you know, I sometimes see like a bit of a bump in ebook sales or Udemy sales, or more importantly, I get people signed up to my list. And that's why the group exists. Okay, the group exists to help me to build my audience, demonstrate my expert status, but mainly to get people onto my list. Yeah, and it's too early to tell whether it's going to work or not. Sign-ups have increased since I've started the group. I've structured the group in a way that means that it's not going to take up very much of my time. I'm basically doing one post a day whilst I'm out walking the dog, and the rest of the time I'm just maybe answering a couple of questions or posting stuff about upcoming events or webinars and stuff that I'm doing, you know. So that's what it's there for. It's a way for me to kind of control the dialogue a little bit in a way that I couldn't in other people's groups, where I'm, you know, you don't want to be having to ask admins for permission to do this and the other times. A pain in the arse, I think. But I'm under no illusion that these Facebook Live posts that I'm doing, they're very much kind of throwaway content. You know, yes, they help the overall picture. They help people who come into the group, if they like what I'm talking about, to want to learn more. But it's still quite throwaway content. And how you can, and then we've got like permanent content as well. Oh no, before we talk about that, we talk about how valuable it is to the reader and how valuable it is to you. Okay, so like naturally, stuff like tweets and Instagram pictures and Facebook stuff, you know, it isn't considered very valuable, particularly, you know. Hardly anybody's going to really break their neck. I mean, I follow some really smart people on Facebook, and I don't really break my neck to see anything that they put out on Facebook. You know, sometimes I do if I'm there, I might read it, but it's because it just doesn't have a lot of value, does it? You know, because it's not a permanent piece of content. You know, it's a throwaway bit of content. But that doesn't mean to say that it's that some of the content that people are putting out there isn't very valuable to the people who are watching. You know, so I imagine when I'm talking about premium pricing to people who've been in dog walking business for 6, 7 years, have never put their prices up, or imagine me talking about premium pricing, it's probably quite valuable to them. And you know, so you need to think about how you, obviously you need to be delivering content that's valuable, yeah, valuable to the reader. Yeah, but you want to make sure that it's valuable to you as well. Okay, so is the content that you're putting out there help? What's it helping you to do? Okay, is it helping you to grow your audience? Is it making you feel good? Is there like a call to action or something you can put on the end of this content, which is what I'm doing a lot of in the group? You know, I'll be almost always mentioning an upcoming webinar, event, or a book that I've written, or you know, just my 33 ideas. Something like that, you know. And if I can constantly keep getting people dropped into my email list through the posts that I do in this group, well, then that's valuable to me, isn't it? Yeah, it's a valuable use of my time. More permanent types of content would be stuff like blogs, podcast, ebooks, you know, your lead magnets, stuff like that, videos that you put on YouTube and stuff. This stuff is more permanent, as in, to me, it is anyway, more than the Instagram stuff, because it's kind of there forever, you know. If somebody searches for you online, like if you were to type in Dominic Hodgson, I would imagine to Google, my podcast would come up, you know, and the books will as well, won't they? Well, those things help position me as an expert. Yeah, but also, man, if you click onto videos, then there'll be like a load of YouTube videos will come up, you know. So that's quite permanent stuff as well. Whereas, like your Instagram, your stuff that you do on Instagram, if you spend a lot of time doing it, that's not going to show up in Google. To me, it didn't anyway. Or certainly, it might send people. Your Instagram account might show up, but again, I don't know. To me, that's not a huge draw. I could be wrong, but this is just what I think. And then you've got, you know, real sort of permanent types of content like your book, yeah. As you know, I'm a huge fan of writing books to help you to grow your business. Books are the original social media, yeah. Social media is just anything that kind of brings us together and gets a conversation going, isn't it? You know, well, the first kind of stories were passed down the ages. Well, all stories were passed down the ages before they were written down. Yeah, we'll come on. We're going to talk about storytelling in a minute, and how storytelling is so important. But books, like, you know, the Bible didn't come along until like a couple of hundred years after Jesus got the chop. But you know, they were still telling the stories before that. Yeah, but the book, the Bible, yeah, that's kind of like the gateway into the religion, isn't it? You know, would Christianity be as big without the Bible? Yeah, I would wager not. And all, if you think about it from a selling point of view, you know, this a sequential selling point of view, the Bible's the first thing you're going to sort of invest in, isn't it? Or maybe it's the first, often it's going to be the first thing that you're going to read. Yeah, it's like the ultimate lead magnet, isn't it? The Bible. Yeah, all religions have like some kind of defining text. Yeah, so it's not just Christianity. Yeah, there's the Quran, there's the Torah, Scientology. You know, that's Dianetics was the thing that kicked that off, wasn't it? Ron L. Hubbard. The Jehovah's Witnesses have a monthly magazine called The Watchtower. And if you want really want to build a following and, you know, really take this tribe building thing to another level, you can do a lot worse than copy some of the marketing tactics used by religions. You know, all joking aside, yeah, there's a. Remember what I said about the lead magnet thing, yeah? But you know, books are special. You know, anything written down is special. So whilst many things online are permanent, like book reviews, blogs, podcasts. You know, if someone's written a book review for you, you know, that's going to be online. You've been in the paper. You know, any PR, all these things are going to add to your expert status. But books are something else. We'll be talking about books in a minute. But for me, just to sort of recap again, for me, all roads kind of lead to Rome. Or Rome for me being my email list. All right, because almost everything that I do, the podcast, the books, you know, anything that I do online, Facebook. It's all designed to get people onto my email list, yeah, because that's where I do most of my selling, you know. So a lot of this stuff might be a little bit moot to you if you're not creating a list yet, yeah. And I hope as well that this will hopefully highlight the point that if you're just fucking around on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and randomly posting things like left, right, and center with no real strategy in mind. Yeah, that you're thinking very tactically then, all right? You need to be thinking a bit more strategically, or a lot more strategically, which is, okay, all this stuff that I'm doing, what's it leading to? Yeah, well, for me, it leads people onto an email list where I can take them through a know, like, trust process, get them on, you know, and then start selling them things. Yeah, and if they like me, they'll stick around, they'll buy more stuff. If they don't like me, they'll fuck off. Either way, I'm not bothered, you know? I want them hot or cold. So I build an audience. And then from that audience, I get them onto my list. So just a few thoughts about, you know, throwaway and permanent content and where I think you should probably be putting your efforts in. Now, there is some content that I'm going to touch upon this when we do some Facebook advert training, which I'm either going to do myself once I've genned up on it a bit more, or I'm going to pull somebody in to do. But there, just to go off on a little bit of a sidetrack, there is such a thing as, well, there's not such, yeah, there's such a thing as the Facebook pixel, right? Which is a little piece of code that you can put onto your website. And when people, you know, click on, you know, visit a blog or something like that, then this pixel will remember them. Yeah, the Facebook pixel will remember them, and you'll be able to build an audience within the ads manager of all the people who visited, like, all the blogs on your site. Yeah, now that's quite powerful information because then you can retarget to those people as well. Yeah, but you don't have to have a blog. You could just do it with like a post. You could put a live post on there or a video post on Facebook. Do it properly through the ads manager, and then the ads manager will track it. It will track how many people have watched the video or clicked on the blog, and it'll tell you how many people watched 50% of it. So, you know, if you've done a live post, a training post, and it's been seen by, I don't know, 10,000 people, and 5,000 of those people watch more than 50% of it. Well, then those 5,000 people would be a pretty good audience for you to retarget some of your new stuff to, wouldn't it? So this is that's the, I think call that alignment content. Yeah. So you put that content out there, basically just to get to see which people are interested. But I'm going to be going more into that when I find out exactly more about it. I'm not 200%. Or fear with it myself yet, and I want to be before I sort of start telling you guys how to do it. But you know, because tracking's important, right? And this brings me nicely onto a little distinction between paid and free traffic. All right. So once you're putting content out there, like who's going to see it? Yeah. Well, obviously you can stick it onto a blog, you can stick it into a Facebook group, you can stick it into a Instagram post, or stick it into a YouTube video. But when you're battling for free content, it gets very noisy, and it's going to get even noisier still. That's why Facebook's running out of space on the timeline, you know. And we're starting to get ads in the ads in Messenger now. Yeah, we'll be getting ads in groups and all this kind of thing, because they're running out of space. People are dying to get on there. They're running out of paid space. So, you know, if you're just concentrating on free, then you're going to be really knackered. Free being organic, yeah. It's just you're just expecting people to be interested in your stuff. Because most of the time, free is not very good, and paid is much better, right? free traffic. If you're getting free traffic, brilliant. Keep trying to get it. Yeah, if you're getting traffic from blogs and stuff, keep getting it. But if you're not, then you know you might be better off investing, if you can afford it, in some paid stuff. Yeah, this is targeted, right? Because you can target your content at people who you know might be interested in it. And they're the people you want to put it in front of, and the people who are going to be more likely to be interested in it and you know, buy your services eventually. So, went off on a little tangent there. Stuff that we're going to be covering more on that, like I say, in some webinars inside the Inner Circle. So, let's talk about storytelling now, all right? And when we're creating content, we're essentially creating stories, right? And we all need to have we should all have some defining stories that tell people a lot about us and the type of person that we are, and the type of business that we run, which in turn will help us to attract the type of people that we want to bring into our business. All right, but stories are really powerful. They're like the original way to teach. Like we said before, paper was invented. You know, people used to just pass down information through stories. For thousands and thousands of years, we've done that from one generation to the next. And there's a reason why stories are so powerful. And it's because there's a specific part of the brain that becomes active when we hear a story. Okay, when we start to hear a story, it triggers like a strong neurological response. And this, using something called fMRI, scientists, functional magnetic resonance imaging, right? That's a technique that tracks the flow of blood in the brain as a surrogate for which areas of the brain are active at different times. So using this fMRI, yeah, they demonstrated that activity in listeners' brains follows and mirrors the brain activity of the storyteller, all right? So the word sync, the words that the storyteller tells, sync the brains with the person who's listening to the story and the brain of the storyteller, right? You literally become more connected, right? This is how we become captivated by stories, yeah? Or we say that people have you know, the audience in the palm of their hand, yeah? And you'll know people in your life who tell a good story. They're popular people generally, aren't they? You know, people want to hear what they have to say. And, you know, storytelling was a job even, you know, like in the early man, you know, there would be somebody in the tribe who was who one of his skills was to be sort of chief storyteller. On a more molecular level, this is the last science thing I'm going to say, research by neuroeconomist Paul Zak shed light on the neurochemical changes that take place in our brains while we are engaged in a story. During tense moments, our brains produce cortisol, which heightens our focus and keeps our attention. Oxytocin is produced when we're shown kindness. This enhances our sense of empathy and motivates cooperation. A happy ending triggers dopamine, which makes us feel optimistic. Yeah. So these are scientifically, yeah, we know that storytelling works. And I really want you to be getting on board with the storytelling idea. Yeah, that you need to be creating, collecting and gathering stories from your past and from your present. Or other people's stories as well, which you can borrow and use as examples, because telling stories in your marketing is the way that you're gonna captivate people a lot more, rather than being just the dog trainer or the dog walker or the dog groomer who talks about the the science of it, you know. Now, as a little example, yeah, I do this all the time. All right, I have a number of key stories that I repeat often in my marketing. One of the more famous ones, I say famous, obviously a bit tongue in cheek, is the story of the magic feather. Now, this was a story that I first wrote in an email. I think it was in the 7th email in my original Dastardly Dog email series. This story also became a chapter in my book called The Magic Feather, was the name of the chapter, in How to Be a Dog Superhero. I've mentioned it in my seminars. I've told it many times in my dog training in a circle. And I've also told podcasts about it as well. Yeah. And the story is that, just as a little example for you, the story is that one day we were out with the dogs and it was a really, really hot day and I was worried about keeping the dogs cool. So it was it wasn't just a hot day, it was a really hot summer. So we had to kind of change what we were doing with the dogs so that we constantly, we were either had access to water or we had access to shade because it was just way too hot to have the dogs out. And there's only so much water you can carry, isn't there? So, you know, keeping the dogs safe, we need to make sure we have water. Now, what we did was we stumbled across a lake, which we'd never really visited very much before. And in that lake, we actually taught some of the dogs to swim. Almost all of the dogs we taught to swim, actually. Some of them didn't like it. A lot of them didn't like it. But some of them were dogs who probably should have been swimmers, but, you know, they wouldn't be brave enough to go and get the ball. But because the weather was so warm, we just had our shorts on and flip-flops and, like, into the lake we went with the dogs, yeah? And it was nice. I mean, it was a bit chilly, but it was nice. You know, it was good. We got some really good photographs. And so this is how we spent this particular summer. Me and the girl who was working for me at the time. And one day I had a little dog with me called Stewie, who was a pug. And Stewie, being a pug, obviously don't like water. So Stewie was not a swimmer at all, and I wouldn't have dreamed of taking him in there. But one day we took Stewie along with the others to this lake, and there was a pile of feathers by the side of the lake. There'd been like a swan massacre the night before. And Stewie, being a pug, a disgusting little pug, was really interested in these feathers, and he kept going over and sniffing and like licking them and everything. And I kept calling for him, Stewie, come back, come back, come back. And he would come back for a second, and then he would wander back over to the feathers. And, you know, quite food motivated normally, Stewie, but he wouldn't come over. He wouldn't even be interested in food. You know, he was just interested in the feathers. And then I had this kind of light bulb moment, and I remembered something that David Davies, my dog trainer and mentor, told me, which was you need to find something that the dog is interested in at that time. So I thought, all right then, if you want a feather, you can have a feather. So I went over and I found like the biggest, cleanest feather I could find, good free feather, and I waved it in front of his face. Yeah, and little Stewie, his little tail was like moving backwards and forwards, and I waved it and I gave him a little sniff of it, and then I walked backwards, and Stewie followed me back towards the lake to where the other dogs were. And I got him back, and I was like, yay, you know, like it worked. I was really pleased with myself, and I thought, oh, I wonder how much further I can take this. And so I walked back a little bit further. Stewie followed me, and I took another couple of steps, and Stewie followed me again. And before I knew it, I had this pug swimming round the lake. This little pug who'd never swam before was like swimming round the lake. I mean, I was like ecstatic. We've got loads of great photographs. And, you know, I used that story to get the point across that to the dog owner that they need to find out something that their dog likes. Yeah, but there's many ways that I can use that story. I can spin it lots of different ways. The point is it's a story. And the reason why I've told you that story now is because I want you to think about how you felt when I was telling you the story, as opposed to how you felt when I was talking about how stories trigger a neurological response. Yeah, you might have found that stuff interesting, especially if you were quite sort of sciencey. But it's the story that hooks you, you know. You want to know the story, you start to picture the day, what it was like, the dogs were hot, Dom wanted to keep them cool, oh yeah, I've got a dog, I know what that's like to want to keep my dog cool. You know, so you basically carried along with me with the story. Possibly not if you've read the book and you've heard me tell it 4 or 5 times at a seminar, but you get the point, yeah? Stories are really, really powerful. Okay, let's look at some other reasons why they're so powerful. All right, well, stories help us make a point without rubbing the listeners' faces in it. Okay, and they allow the listener or the reader to kind of discover a lesson seemingly on their own. All right? So the key here is to tell stories that help you to make a point. So even if I didn't come out at the end of that story about the magic feather and say, and that's how, I don't need to say to people, that's how, that's why it's important for you to find out something that your dog likes. Yeah, because they're going to know that already, aren't they? Yeah, they're going to discover that themselves. They're going to be sitting listening, saying, "Oh my God, if Dom could use a feather, then surely I can find something that my dog likes that I can use." Yeah, but they're going to discover that on their own. All right, but you have to tell a story that helps you to make a point. That point, that point could have been attention. I could have used that story to say, I think I have used the story as well, actually, to use the point about getting attention. So you need to get your dog's attention, or you need to get your client's attention. Yeah, if you're marketing your business, you need to have a magic feather that you wave in front of them that helps you to get their attention. Yeah, which is your USP, which is the thing that makes you different from everybody else. Yeah, I could spin the story that way, couldn't I, too? And if you were a business owner who was conscious of the fact that that your business is very similar to everybody else's, yeah, that story is going to resonate with you, especially if you're a dog person as well. So stories are also, they're memorable. All right, they help people remember things, right? We remember stories, and we often don't get. We like to have closure on things. There was like an experiment done with waiters in a restaurant, and the waiters who were able to remember like lots of different orders and how open those orders are, it wasn't until the person paid for the food and like left the restaurant, then the waiters would start to forget about it. Yeah, because it was like closed. It was like a closed loop. Yeah, whilst the loop's open, we've got people's attention, and that's what stories allow you to do as well. Yeah, so we and I'm I mean I don't do this magnificently all the time. I'm learning how to do it more, and I'm implementing it more in my own business. Yeah, so they help us remember things, but they're very meaningful as well. They might have a, they probably will have a slightly different meaning for different people, but that's another reason why you need to be kind of consistent with your stories and have some core stories that you tell over and over again. Dan Kennedy tells a tale of like if somebody wants to work with him, like if somebody is asking about Dan, asking for a copywriter, and they're asking somebody who knows Dan Kennedy. Dan wants the person who knows him to be saying things like, you need to prepare yourself for the fee. Yeah, make sure you're sitting down when he tells you how much it's going to cost. Yeah, because for lots of reasons. Yeah, he doesn't want price buyers. He wants people coming to him to know that he's and understand that he's expensive. And so that's what he wants to be known for. Being expensive is one of the things that he wants to be known for. That's one of the things that I want to be known for as well. Yeah, being expensive, being busy, not to be messed around. That's one of my things. Yeah, this is why I'm take quite a strong line in my Facebook group. Yeah, there's rules in there and stuff like that. And same with the inner circle, with the webinars and everything that I do. Yeah, I have rules and I've got principles and stuff because I'm trying to cultivate this idea so that when people come into the business, they know all about me straight away. Stories help create and reveal emotions. Yeah, they tap into what makes us human. So whether it's humor or sadness in the story, we've all experienced it. We've all experienced some humor and some sadness. Which is why we kind of love stories in a different way to we sort of how we might feel about, a cookbook or a Haynes manual. Yeah, you might love your cookbook for a different reason. Yeah, but the story is the thing that moves you because it's got emotion in it, hasn't it? Yeah, and they help build connections. This is a really, really good point. If you've ever been on a like a team building trip, which I have done in the past at work, at my previous job. We went away for like a team building weekend, and everybody's kind of getting on and stuff, and you're thrown together, and like the day goes okay, but it's not until like the bar on the night when people start to tell stories, isn't it, about what they've been doing, excuse me, or even if they're sharing stories about things that have happened that day, yeah, these are the things that connect us and bring us together. You know, some of the sort of happiest memories I have of spending time with family or friends, and are of times when we've been together having a meal telling stories. Yeah, even if those stories that people are telling stories about contain people I don't even know, you know, they're interesting. So what kind of stories can you tell? Well, you should have some kind of core story, right? You should have some kind of reason to why you're doing the thing that you're doing, I think. Yeah, this could be like explaining your mission, you know, why you're particularly passionate about something. It could be a sort of Damascus moment, or like a moment when you were converted from being a harsh dog trainer to a positive dog trainer, or maybe you were converted from a positive dog trainer to a harsh dog trainer. But this is really important, yeah? Like another one of my stories, which you'll have probably heard before, and we're going to tell the full one here, but, you know, the story of me out with the dogs when I started the business, and the business was going well, but I didn't have very much control of the dogs, and I wasn't enjoying the job anymore. You know, I didn't feel safe. I didn't feel like I was giving very good value to the clients, and it wasn't really what I signed up for, you know? So then I learned about dog training, and my business went on a different direction, yeah, and you know, came more into the dog training, started to implement it with the dogs, so that I wasn't just letting them mess around together, I was playing and interacting and training with them. And then that's why my little story, yeah, not like an amazing story by any means, but it's a story, yeah, and it's a reason why I'm doing what I'm doing. And at the same time, it also tells people a lot about me. It tells people that you know, I'm not content to just like be slapdash and just do things and make money from things. Yeah, I'm conscientious. It shows that I care, and that I care about the safety of the animals that I'm working with. It shows that I care about my own personal development as well. And it demonstrates my expert status, doesn't it? Yeah, because I've learned about it, I've implemented it in my business, I've written books, done podcasts, etc., etc. Yeah, so these are lots of other things that they do. So you will all have a story, and we've got like 20 minutes to go. We will go into this more in future, either ledgers or in the audio training as well, because I think it's important that we start crafting our stories, and we start collecting them, and we start using them, and we start repeating them. Because this is, you know, it's huge for all the reasons that I mentioned at the start. So where do you start with all this? Yeah, once you've got your sort of core story, what do? You don't just grab an orange box and stand on it in the middle of the park and start shouting about why you love dogs, do you? No, of course not. Although you can do that, I suppose. I wouldn't really recommend it as a business growth strategy. Well, emails, funnily enough, are a great place to start. Yeah, they're a great place to test the content that you're writing, to see what floats people's boat, to see if people are interested, to help you to connect with people. But emails are just one way to do it. I'm going to recap email. I'm going to talk about emails in a moment, which I'm going to go into. But you can tell your stories however you like. Yeah, you could use videos, blogs, Facebook Live stuff, if that floats your boat as well. You don't have to do emails, yeah? You might not like writing. You might be much better at speaking. You might be better at speaking in person. You might be better at talking to clients on the phone. You should do the thing that you want to do. But one reason why you should, if you aren't already, start doing emails. Emails are brilliant, I think, because they allow you to move your prospect through the know, like, and trust process gradually, you know, in a very non-threatening way. And over time, you position yourself as an expert. I tell the story about me and Beth. You know, when we first got together, when she thought I was a bell end, you know, when we worked in the Empire Theatre together, I was like 17, she was 20 or something. I probably was a bell end at the time. But because we were you know, if I'd just met her in a pub or something, or a club, or if we'd been set up on a blind date or something, then the chances are I would have really blown it and like ruined any chance of having any kind of relationship with her, because her initial impression of me was that I was like an arrogant arsehole. However, I had one thing in my favour, which was that we were working as ushers in the Empire, yeah? So we were selling ice creams and programmes. And when it was busy, which it often was, we would be working sometimes like 3, 4, you know, 5 nights a week. And if it was a pantomime on, we used to work like every show. That would be like 6 shows a day, 6 days a week, 2 shows on a Wednesday and like 3 on a Saturday maybe. Yeah, we weren't always working together then, but we were, you know, she might have been in a different part of the theatre than me, but we were working together often enough for me to be able to follow up with her. Right? And not having any kind of follow up in your business is costing you dearly. Yeah? Because, as in the case of me and Beth, yeah, you often don't hit it off straight away. Could say a similar thing about different relationship, of course. But Zita, who came to the boot camps in the inner circle and also a platinum member too, Zita told me on the phone that she, you know, she thought I was a proper arrogant bastard when she first started reading my emails. You know, who is this guy? Who is this guy to tell me about running my business when I've been doing this for 14 years? And over time, I wore Zita down too and got her to the boot camp. You know, that, and that's the power of kind of emails. Yeah, it's certainly the power of follow up. But just emails are a great way for you to do that, yeah? And because especially daily emails, because your daily email is just kind of your brain fart for the day that you link into a sales message for something that you're selling, you know, it doesn't matter, it doesn't need to be perfect, yeah? You can just bash these things out, well, daily. Yeah, and they just help you to build a relationship. You know, yeah, you shared, like, you. Not everybody likes it. Yeah, not everybody likes you. But again, you want to be, like, spewing out the people who are just warm, who are a bit like, nah. I want them in and interested, or out and, you know, off my list. Right? I only want to be interested in talking to the people who I'm interested in talking to. And this is a little example for you, just put some figures on that. I've got, I've had about 1,100, nearly 1,200 people sign up and to my Grow Your Pet Business Fast email list. That's in a year or so. But I've had 400 and odd people unsubscribe from that list as well. Yeah? So I'm running at like 60% retention. 40% of the people come in and like leave, you know, because they don't like me, which is completely fine. Yeah, I don't want those people were never going to buy anything anyway. But you know, the emails, writing regular emails, or having an email sequence, it means that you don't kind of have to have any special sales tricks or be able to master compelling copywriting skills, because you get an opportunity every day to just chip away and chip away with like relentless follow-up, you know. To go back to me and Beth again, you know, I never, during the course of our courtship, if you like, I never, you know, I didn't like go to the gym and like put on like 20 pounds of muscle, or like start wearing nicer clothes, or I might have been a bit politer, but like, you know, it was just follow up, you know, it was just like constant follow up. And getting back to the content thing and the storytelling, you know, emails that you write become books, become blogs, become ebooks, and then courses and seminars, and maybe it's even TV programs and films, or maybe it's even a play or a cartoon series. You never know what they're going to become. But I would wager that the people who throw themselves into email marketing in this group will be the people who go on to create the most, a lot more of the permanent content and the powerful pieces of content. They'll be the people who end up, I wouldn't say more successful, but yeah, well, but that, yeah, they probably will. Yeah. You know, all other things being equal, they probably will, because you get prolific with the content. Then we'll talk about that in a moment, about trying to be prolific. But you never know where all of this sort of content's going to lead that you produce. All right, I have ambitions for my business and targets and visions, But you know, I don't really know where it's all going to go. Yeah, I mean, this time last year, I was just starting to build a list for the Pet Business Inner Circle side of the business. Since then, I've launched a couple of products, written a book, we've done a boot camp, did a seminar tour. I've got two more boot camps planned for this year, tour of the States next year, that's back on. I'm going to try and turn that into a little world tour, putting the feelers out for another couple of hosts in different countries. But other things happen too, you know. So, like, I'm currently writing a book with Vicky Fraser, right? A different type of marketing book, more of a story. But we don't know where that's really going to go, you know. It's just something that we're both kind of interested in doing. Now, I know that that will help me, and I know it will help Vicky as well. Vicky's got another couple of books on the bubble, and this book that we're writing will open up her audience to me and open up my audience to her and help us to find a new audience and, you know, help us basically to sell more stuff, you know. But like a year ago, well, probably 2 years ago, like I was in Vicky's Inner Circle, you know. I was 2.5 years ago, I probably bought a book writing product. Now I'm writing a book with her. So you, like I say, you never know where these things are going to lead to. Yeah, you never really know what you're going to kind of get good at as well. That's the thing. Starting to see this more and more when you look at like celebrities on the telly and the different things that they've done in their life and where their careers go, and like you never really know where things are going to end up. But I can guarantee you that you won't end up anywhere unless you start putting yourself out there and creating some of this content. I'm starting another podcast soon. I'm finishing the video podcast and I'm going to start another one. Don't really know where that's going to go. But again, all these things are actions that help me to kind of build my list. Now I might get like a lucky break along the way. So, you know, I might get invited onto This Morning, or Chris Evans might get hold of one of my dog training books or something, and he might invite me on the radio too, and that might supercharge my progress and might mean that I'm making like a lot more money a lot faster, and I'm selling a lot more of my shit. But even if that doesn't happen, yeah, I'm prolific enough. I intend to be prolific enough that I'll sort of hit a critical mass anyway, eventually, even without that kind of lucky break. So, you know, I'm looking at doing more stuff like the thing that I'm doing with Vicky. I'm looking at doing more things with other people as well, teaming up with them, possibly other dog trainers, possibly other marketers, possibly people from completely different niches where we can, you know, bring together our expertise and help us to sell more stuff that way as well. All right, regardless of whether I do that or not as well, I intend to be prolific. All right. Late last year, me and Toby went to see Kasabian at the Newcastle Metro Arena, and I've seen them a few times. I've been a fan of them for like years since we saw them supporting Oasis when Oasis were around at Wembley Stadium. But I kind of forgot. Obviously, Toby's only 13; he's just getting into music and stuff the last couple of years. When I went along, I kind of forgot how prolific that they'd been, you know. Now, whether you like the band or not is regardless. They're pretty prolific, you know. They must have an album come out every year. Some of them are a lot better than others. They do have a general kind of theme, but they're still different enough that they're going to help them to put themselves in front of more people, yeah, to help them to build their audience. I'm going to see The Script next month with Toby. And first, I was like, I'm not really sure if I want to go and see them when Beth suggested it. And then we stuck Spotify on, and it turns out that I used to love all like a lot of their songs, you know. They had a couple of duffer albums, in my opinion, anyway, which I wasn't so keen on, but then I listened to some of the stuff off their new album, and that's really good as well, yeah. And this is because these guys are prolific, you know. They're like, I mean, they're obviously putting a lot of work into this stuff, but the more they produce, the more like snow gets added to the snowball, which just gradually gets bigger over time. And this is part of my plan, you know, to be prolific, you know. So I'm planning on like getting at least a book a year out, at least a book a year from now on. And I think when I hit kind of, five or six, or maybe four or five, then it'll start to hit a bit of a critical mass. It'll hit a critical mass even quicker, if I do start keep doing smart stuff like I'm doing the book with Vicky, another couple of things I've got planned, and I'm kind of I'm doing the books in a way that they hopefully for some people they'll lead from one to another. So you'll see that there's links in Walk Yourself Wealthy for How to Be Your Dog Superhero. And when I redo How to Be Your Dog Superhero, then there'll be links for Walk Yourself Wealthy in there, because there will be dog walkers out there. I know there are dog walkers out there who were like me when I started my business. They don't really know anything about business, but they don't know anything about dogs either. So Walk Yourself Wealthy will help them with the business, and How to Be Your Dog Superhero will help them control their dogs a lot better. All right, but the books are just one part of the pyramid for me, but they are like an important part. I'm actually considering wondering whether to maybe in the second half of this year whether to convert half a dozen of the most popular newsletters that I did for the dog training in the circle. Yeah, that's the one where I produce a Canine Coaching Chronicle, and turn them into like half a dozen 10,000-word ebooks. Get them onto Amazon. Because ultimately I want to be everywhere. Yeah, I know the power of a book, and now I've got two. I want to have 10. each of those ebooks that I put on will be an ebook. I'll record the audio book as well. It'll be a physical book, possibly. They might not be big enough to make into physical books, but they might be, or they might be worth maybe putting two or three of them together, or five of them together to make them like a compendium of books. So people can have all the books for like 20 quid or something like that. And just to stress it, why I'm thinking like this, it's hard work writing a book. It's hard work doing anything consistently. But like books like The Perennial Seller and Write, Publish, Repeat, they say that the best thing you can do to ensure the success of your first book is to get writing your next one straight away. It's slightly easy for me to say because I'm a little bit further down the line than what you guys are, but you know the story. I'm not bullshitting you. This is how I've come to have all this content that I've got now. I've been creating content for a long time. Yeah, for 4 years or more now, I've been creating content, and I've got at least, 750,000 words that I've written for emails. I've got nearly 50 podcasts out there. I messaged Alex, the video guy. He said he reckons we've got like 4 terabytes of video. I have no idea what that is, but it's many, many hours, many hundreds of hours, I think. He thought it could be touching thousands of hours. Not all of it's usable, probably, but most of it is. But the important thing for you to realize is that you have to start somewhere. You have to start with one thing and then build it from there. But you must get started. You must get started with this content creation. I hope this CD helps to sort of motivate you to get started with that. I hope it's opened up your mind to all the different ways that you can sell more things and connect with more people and bring more people into your business. Because it should be a crucial part of your overall marketing strategy, and your business growth strategy should be to about be about creating content. So we covered quite a lot today. We covered storytelling, why that was important, different ways you can put the content out there. I went off tangent a tad and talked about paid versus free, and how to use content on Facebook and stuff, and the different kinds of content that you should be producing. So listen to this a couple of times. Think in 80-20 terms. What is going to be the most effective thing for your business? What is the content that you're going to be able to reuse? Yeah, so like I said before, an email becomes a blog, becomes an ebook, becomes a course, etc., etc. And start collecting stories. Yeah, your own stories, famous stories, and just stories in general. Yeah, start collecting them, start making notes of them in your phone. Use Evernote. That's another good way to do it, is to create an Evernote account. Is it Evernote? Yeah, sure, it's Evernote. And then you can just like screenshot things and save them into Evernote, and you'll have a collection of all these stories. So you never run out of things to say in your emails, and over time you gradually build a number of a number of stories that form your core story, which ultimately become the thing, help you to become known for whatever it is you want to be known for. So that's it for me today, guys. I hope you've enjoyed this. I'll see you all next time. Bye-bye.